Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And a welcome, everyone, to the Three Martini Lunch for Wednesday, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, we start with kind of a double shot for the Bush family on the good martini. First of all, happy birthday to Bush 41. He's 89 years old today, and hopefully there are many more birthdays in the future for him. Secondly, a new Gallup tracking poll released yesterday shows that, wow, after just a little over 4 years, 4.5 years, I guess now, George W. Bush is now more popular among the American people than President Obama. You remember when he left office, it was about 70% approval for Obama and somewhere in the mid to high 20s for W. Now it's 49% for Bush, 46% for Obama, and Obama's got a 47% approval rating. And Jim, as we get logged down in here in these NSA debates and the immigration debate, there's not a lot of difference between the presidents. But when you think about how they approach the economy, how they approach the war on terror, how they approach key social issues, how they just generally carried themselves and their attitude towards their role in American history, it's good to see the American people noticing some of the better qualities of George W. Bush.
Yeah, and a lot of people are trying to, you know, piece together why this is, whether it is absence makes the heart grow fonder, that over time, kind of the partisan passions of the Bush era, at least surrounding him, fade a little bit. He's actually up 10 points among Democrats, and some people have kind of speculated whether this is the... You've heard the argument, particularly put forth by a bunch of liberal commentators, that the only good conservative is a dead conservative. People who absolutely, totally hated Reagan suddenly feel warmer and fuzzier towards him once he's no longer in office and after he passes away. And same for everyone else. And you're even, you know, occasionally you'll hear some folks say, well, look, at least Bush was good on immigration. These Tea Party types are so terrible. Yada, yada, yada. You know, people who, you know, denounced McCain and Palin in 08, suddenly saying that Romney and Ryan were much, you know, were the worst conservative in the whole wide world is whoever is leading the right at that given moment. And the further back you go, the more like, oh, Eisenhower, what a fine fellow he was. You know? But also in this, I think you wonder how much of this represents folks on the left who were totally convinced that the eavesdropping, that the Bush was this crazy, warrantless wiretaps. Government was out of control. Obama's going to fix this. Obama's going to clean this right up. And then we find out that actually these programs have been expanded under Obama. So maybe this is a little bit of buyer's remorse or maybe a little bit of guilt on the part of liberals who kind of realize that, oh, something we thought that was the embodiment of pure evil clearly wasn't. Or at least, you know, our messiah figure has embraced them, so we have to change the doctrine. But I also think a good portion of this, I'm going to embarrass my brother by quoting one of his most infamous comments. Summer of 2008, he says he's voting for Obama. My parents are giving him the third degree. And he says, look, I just don't think it can get any worse. This is in summer of 2008, before the Great Recession hits. But, you know, look, I mean, Iraq was going on and people were dying there. And it's safe to say that there had not been serious wage growth during the Bush years. There was good reason for people to be kind of tired and exhausted and frustrated with the Bush years. There'd been scandals, sure. There'd been Hurricane Katrina and all that stuff. So there was good reason for people to have their frustrations with Bush back then. And a lot of people, probably those numbers of the Obama inauguration that you cite, probably was this widespread sense of, well, it can't get any worse than it's been, and this new guy has to be better. And here we are. And unemployment is 7.7%. Lots of folks not counted because they're discouraged workers. We're nearly 5 years later. You know, the economy is dragging along the bottom, little bits of growth here. Obamacare looks like this major mess on our hands. We've had Benghazi. We've had Boston. You know, I mean, William F. Buckley used to say, don't immanentize the eschaton, which is to say, don't be utopian. Don't try to expect God's kingdom here on earth. And lo and behold, the Obamasiah has not delivered God's kingdom on earth. And in fact, we've got a lot of the same problems we had before, and in fact, maybe even bigger problems. And maybe this sense of widespread government corruption and butt covering has only gotten even worse under the Obama years. So it shouldn't be that surprising. A couple people wondering if this kind of is a good sign for Jeb Bush. I think it actually just represents the public having a more, I would say, a more accurate, more nuanced view of the Bush years. And I think actually, yes, conservatives, how they feel about George W. Bush. I know, based on spending and a couple other areas, you know, a lot of conservatives are now rethinking the Patriot Act. Mm-hmm. There may be some, you know, I think everyone's going to have a more balanced view of Bush, of having some parts of his presidency people remember very fondly and other parts they don't. And, you know, it's good because this demonization of him was, not healthy for the country and kind of representing kind of a childish temper tantrum response to the realities of modern governance.
Yeah, a good point. And just to clarify, when I talked about how his economic performance was better, I was mainly talking about tax cuts, not so much the spending, because his spending and a Republican Congress going along with that is largely why we ended up with what we got in 2006 and 2008. So we paid the price for that. On to martini number two now. And, Jim, we've seen this play out over the last 2 to 3 years in a number of different countries in the Islamic world. Started in Tunisia, then Egypt, briefly in Bahrain, a little bit in Jordan. Obviously, it's raging right now in Syria. And now the latest example of protesters raging in public squares. This time is in Turkey, Istanbul, Taksim Square. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Prime Minister Erdogan, who is most famous in this country for having a Marine hold an umbrella over his head recently when he visited the White House, got upset with these protests. He basically was fed up with them, so they unleashed the tear gas and the water cannons, and people are wondering now whether Turkey is headed towards a fate somewhere maybe not as bad, but possibly as bad as Syria. Jim, you used to live there. You understand this better than most. How far is Erdogan ready to go here, and how do you think this is going to play out?
I think the demonstrations, the reaction, and the crackdown of yesterday demonstrate that Erdogan is willing to go pretty darn far. And I'll save the really 2-hour version of this lecture and try to give you like the 2-minute version of it. But Erdogan, former mayor of Istanbul, comes to power in 2002, is considered a mild Islamist. And the attitude of the U.S. towards his coming to power back in 2002 was that, look, this is not the guy we want, but so far he seems like a guy we can do business with. And it's worth noting that particularly in that first term, the years that I was there, 2005 to 2007, he was a little more circumspect. There were these claims that this guy was a demagogue. This guy was a guy who was set on, to use an ironic phrase, fundamentally transforming this country of Turkey. But the idea that he was, you know, that Turkey, which had been this, by the standards of the Middle East and its neighborhood, remember, its neighbors are Iran, Iraq, and Syria. And then you have Turkey, which is a functioning democracy. Women's rights are way better in Turkey than they are in most other Muslim countries. It was officially secular, although it was like 98% Muslim. So this is not a country in which you could say it was pluralist in any sense of the term we in the West expect. That it was, you know, compared to a lot of other places, a country that had functioned, that was not a threat to its neighbors, that had, at least when I was there, a boisterous free press in which criticism of the president and prime minister and the government was fairly tolerated. And then bit by bit, year by year, notch by notch, the government got a lot more oppressive of the free press. And the opposition parties had all kinds of corruption problems and incompetence problems. They had the perception was they had really mismanaged the economy leading up to that 2002 election. And so it ended up more and more about this cult of personality around Prime Minister Erdogan. And he's basically, now you can see what happens of a third term, absolute no checks on his powers and belief that he can do whatever the heck he wants to do. So it started out over this park that they wanted to build in Taksim, you know, just demolishing this park near Taksim Square. But now it's turned into basically the way the government treats the people. And as you saw, if you watched any of the footage yesterday, this is a first-rate brutal crackdown. The entire public square, which is probably well compared to a combination between Times Square in New York City, maybe DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., you know, is a large gathering place for all walks of life in Istanbul, just a cloud of tear gas. And this is, you know, several days. They have armed barricades. They're bringing in the fire trucks, spraying people with hoses. The protesters are fighting back with fireworks and you know, throwing back the canisters, throwing rocks at cops. Pepper spray is apparently getting sprayed at everybody every day. I mean, it's just an absolute chaos in the largest city in the country, and they have similar clashes with police in every other city in the country. And it's a mess. And at this point, really, you're at a point where the only way this can end is with either the prime minister completely having a total personality transformation and recognizing that there are checks on his power and that he has abused his power and he can't rule the country quite so in such an authoritarian manner, or he quashes this. And it certainly it looks like he's going to go for that second option. And I just worry that Turkey will not come out of this the way it was. A country that kind of looked like it could be a role model for the very chaotic and dangerous Middle East. So it is a bad martini, bad rocky, we could say. These are the traditional drink there. I just kind of feel powerless to, you know, as we see this. And this is a decision that's in the hands of the Turks. And it's very much an open question as to how this shakes out in the, you know, days and weeks and months ahead.
Well, very, very troubling. Time now for a massive shift over to our crazy martini. And Jim, you know, in political debate history, there have been some great lines. There you go again. George H.W. Bush on his birthday. Remember, Michael Dukakis had a really clumsy answer, and Bush said that was about as clear as Boston Harbor, and so many other great moments in debate history. Not sure this one is up there. Ed Markey, the Democratic congressman from Massachusetts, been there since the 70s, has a slight lead right now in his special Senate election against Republican Gabriel Gomez. This is for the remainder of John Kerry's Senate term. And so Gomez was slamming Markey, saying, you've been there for 30-some years. You're helping to contribute to these massive budget deficits. This isn't all that complicated. This is simply a math equation. What is your problem? And Markey fires back with this classic line.
Thank you. You know, I heard Mr. Gomez talk about math and the budget. Well, it's really not math. It's just arithmetic. It's very simple arithmetic. It's not as complicated as math.
Well, that settles that, Jim.
Did the Gomez answer involve algebra or geometry or any of that stuff, at calculus, any of that kind of stuff? Because I thought budgets were pretty much addition and subtraction. Money come in, money go out, that kind of stuff. That's classic. It's, you know, first of all, I'm reminded of the old Dennis Miller joke. You can get a sense of the state of education in this country when only one of the three R's actually starts with the letter R. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. But, you know, they didn't realize spelling wasn't one of the three R's. But now, also, here's the great irony. So isn't it interesting that arithmetic is coming up as the marquee answer in a state where no one knows how to pronounce the letter R? As Congressman Markey explained that day. So, you know, this does belong to go down in history. Until you brought it to my attention, I had not heard that, Greg. So I hope this gets a wider play. We can all make a certain, you know, verbal slips and stuff like that, but you get the feeling there was something else in Markey's head that he wanted to say, because nothing really makes that. It's not math, it's arithmetic. Those are synonyms, sir. You know? Clearly, math is not your specialty, nor English, leaving us wondering what Markey is good at.
I think that only adds to the understanding of why a guy who's been there so long is having such a hard time winning in such a very Democratic state. And we'll find out here at the end of the month whether he can hold on. So stay tuned to that. Jim, have a great day. Work on both math and arithmetic with your kids when they do their homework tonight. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Karembas of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.